Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
There we go. I did that because I wanted to. My people. That's what happens when you let the band preach. No, I actually did that. That's Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which is a piece I have loved all my life, and I've wanted to do it all my life, and I didn't learn it until 2.5 years ago. And that's what we're talking about this morning. The wisdom of taking action. Tell me if this has not happened to you. You're going through your day-to-day life. You're working in the house. You're driving the car. You're in the garage or whatever. And an idea for a product comes to you, and you think, wow, someone should create a product that does this, that a service that does this, right? And you get that idea. And 2 years later, there's the product you had in mind. It's on television. They're selling it. It's at Target. Your friends are buying them. Somebody's getting rich on it. And you're thinking, I had that idea. What's the difference between you and the person who came up with that product? One of you took action and one of you didn't. One of you had this idea for a product and said, hey, I'm going to sketch a picture of it. I'm going to get somebody who can make it. I'm going to get somebody who can duplicate it. I'm going to test it, make sure it works. I'm going to take it to market and did. And the other person, you, said, here's an idea for a product. But the Kardashians are on. Right? That's the only difference, is one of you took action and the other one didn't. So, let me ask you a pretty serious question about your life. Think about your life and answer this question. If you were doomed to live the same life over and over again for eternity, would you choose the life that you are currently living? If you would, great. Keep doing what you're doing because it's working. If you wouldn't, my question is, what are you doing to change that? What are you doing? What actions are you involved with right now to make that happen? And if you're not, when exactly was that going to happen? We're in a series right now called Hashtag Wisdom. And what we're doing is each week we're looking at the book of Proverbs, which is a book in the Bible. The Bible is actually a book of 66 different books. Proverbs is one of the earlier books. It was written by a guy named King Solomon. King Solomon was known for being one of the wisest men who has ever lived. And what we start to see in Proverbs is that this idea of taking action is not only throughout all of Proverbs, but it's throughout the entire Bible. If you have your Bible, I want you to open it to Proverbs chapter 6, verses 5 through 11. If you don't have your Bible, don't worry about it. We're going to put the verse on the screen. If you don't own a Bible, We give them away for free. They're at the Velcro bar. Just stop by and pick one up. There's no catch or anything like that. Just take one and go. So let's read here. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 5 through 11. Free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the snare of the fowler. Go to the ant, you sluggard. I love that. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man. There's a lot there, but the theme is this awesome word, sluggard. I love that word, okay? If you look it up, it means a lazy, sluggish person. I want to throw the word slimy in there as well. You have to wonder, though, okay, the Bible is the word of God. Why does he include the word sluggard, and he does it more than once? It's throughout Proverbs. Why would he do that? I'll tell you what I think. I think it was because there is a sluggard in every one of us. There is part of us that would just rather stay on the couch, that would just rather sleep in and watch TV. Now, the whole idea of taking action and initiative is much bigger than I can cover right here in this sermon. But I do want to let you know about an opportunity. I teach a course called Virtuoso through Verve University. It is starting August the 2nd, and we're going to go much deeper into this subject. We're going to talk about eliminating limiting beliefs. We're going to talk about setting goals based on your dreams and your ideas, making plans for those goals. We're going to talk about time management so that we can give you more time. It's my Virtuoso time process. And we're going to also talk about the traits and practices of people who rise to the top 1% of their field. What they do is different than the other 99%. And if you practice it, you'll get the same results. That's what we learned. So just sign up at the Velcro bar or ask questions, or you can talk to me afterwards. But what I would like to do this morning is talk about three things. Number one, I'd like to go through some of the ideas, some of the challenges, the things that keep us from taking action. I would like to talk about the benefits of taking action when we do start to get motivated and make things happen. And then I would like to talk a little bit about what that might mean for you. Now, there is a book that I'm going to recommend. This is a book that changed my life. I've read it more than once. It's called The War of Art. The War of Art. Now, that's a turn on the phrase, The Art of War, which is the Sun Tzu very old ancient book about war. That's not it. It's the War of Art. This is a book about taking action. It's a book about acting on your dreams. Stephen Pressfield wrote the book. He wrote Legend of Bagger Vance, Tides of War, a lot of famous books. In this book, Pressfield identifies a negative force in the universe which keeps us from doing the things we long to do. He calls this force resistance with a capital R. He equates this to no less than Satan. Resistance has one mission in life, and that is to keep everything exactly like it is, that you never move forward and that you never grow. If you have a dream or an idea or something that you have never acted on, if you have a vision of the person whom you really want to become health-wise, personally, spiritually, but you've never done the things it takes, if you're a painter who doesn't paint, a writer who doesn't write, a speaker who doesn't speak, or a guitar player who doesn't play guitar, if you have a dream of like starting a business, being an entrepreneur, and you've never taken that risk, you know exactly what resistance is. You've experienced it. It's that little voice that tells you, oh, that's stupid. You can't do that. You're not good enough for that. You don't even deserve it. It tells you you're too good. You're too old. You're too young. You're too fat. You're too thin. You're too ugly, too pretty, whatever it is, okay? Resistance wants a world full of sluggards. Resistance does not want you to live that dream life that you were meant to live. Now, I said the life that you were meant to live. Who means for you to live that life? God does. It's unbelievable the life that God has planned for every one of us. The cool thing about Verve is that we try to be an atmosphere of non-judgment, of openness, so that anyone, atheists, people who have all kinds of different notions of God or no notion of God or whatever, can come here and explore, ask questions, and learn about that. So we get some unusual ideas about God. And one of the common themes that we hear is that people have a perception that following Jesus, following Christ, means this dutiful, solemn, boring, rule-following, like drone of a life. And the fact is, nothing could be further from the truth. The life that God has planned for you is unbelievable. It is full of challenge and risk and reward and romance and hardship and ultimate victory. The life that God has for you reads like the movie Braveheart. It reads like Star Wars. It reads like High School Musical. No, not High School Musical. I'm sorry. It reads like Gladiator. And you know this, by the way, because you have passions. You have abilities inside you and dreams that you've never acted on, and you're going, hey, why is this here? Well, it was there. That's one of the ways God talks to us. God tells us the thing we need to do by telling us what we're good at, what we long to do. And some people don't believe this, but I want to prove it. I want to show you just a few of the many verses in the Bible that talk about this. The first one is Jeremiah from the Old Testament, Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11, a very famous verse. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." That's God. Let's fast forward in the Bible to the New Testament, the book of John, chapter 10, verse 10. John was one of Jesus' best friends. In it, he says, "The thief," that's resistance, "comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But I, Jesus, have come that they may have life and have it to the full." God wants abundance in your life. So, if the God of the universe wants you to live the dream that you've always had, and you have that dream and you have those abilities, why are we sluggards? What is resistance? Why does it work? What I would like to do right now is talk about that. Let's look for some solutions with that. And what I'm going to do is sort of break apart what resistance really consists of. Resistance will use any means necessary, so it's much bigger than this, but I want to talk about what I consider to be three of the most prevalent challenges that we deal with: fears, laziness, and distractions. We're going to start with fears. I study these things for a living. I'm a professional speaker. I tour all over the world and talk about this. I've studied fears. We have three fears that hold us back most often. They are the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, and the fear of success. And what we're going to do is look at the fear of failure and the fear of rejection together, because they're two sides of the same coin. Both of them, fear of failure and of rejection, consist of our wanting some kind of an outcome, our making an effort toward that outcome, and it doesn't work. Either we fail or someone rejects us. Failure and rejection in and of themselves really don't mean anything. What's a challenge with this is the message that failure and rejection have for us. And every failure you ever experience and every rejection that you ever experience will have one of two messages, and only two. One of them is real and one of them is false. The real message of failure and rejection is simply this: something's got to change. That's all. Something has to change. Either you have to get better at it, you have to do it differently, you have to ask someone different, you have to do it in a different way. Something has to change. That is the real message, and that's a benefit. That's a good thing. The problem is, not all of us hear that message. What we hear is the false message of rejection and failure, and that is, you're not good enough. You're not worthy of that. Most of it comes from our childhood, where we were not shown that we are loved just for who we are, regardless of our efforts and our actions and our successes or failures, where love required performance, or mistakes were punished. And I don't mean, when we make mistakes, they need to be corrected, that's good. And sometimes there's consequences, that's normal. Beyond that, when mistakes were punished, there's a price or a pain exacted for that action. That causes us to associate pain with taking action, and we don't do it, okay? The solution, every time, to the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, is to get 100% of our personal self-worth from the fact that God loves us completely and unchangeably. Jesus Christ, the creator of this universe, thinks you are awesome, just the way you are. There is nothing you can do to increase it or to decrease it. There's nothing you can do to earn it or to lose it. No sin you have committed, no sin you will ever commit. No action you take, success or failure, will change the fact that Jesus loves you that completely. When we're willing to accept that, when we take that in and say yes to that, because it's sitting there right now for every one of us, we simply say yes to that, it gives us a base that can't be shaken and it can't be taken. And it gives us the freedom then to fail, the freedom to be rejected. Now, why do we need the freedom to fail or be rejected? Well, for failure, I'll put it this way. We need to be free to fail because, spoiler alert, you will fail. And here's the kicker. You will fail a lot. And here's the harder one. If you're successful, you will fail more than failures do. Successful people fail a lot more. The problem is with failures is they stop at failure. Successful people keep on failing until they succeed. Michael Jordan had a famous Nike commercial a number of years ago. It said, this is Michael Jordan, right? He said, I have missed more than 3,000 shots. I have lost over 300 games. 26 times, I have been trusted to make the game-winning final shot and missed. I fail over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed. Let's go beyond sports analogies. We get those all the time. Let's look at business. There's a guy named Elon Musk. Some of you have heard of him. Elon Musk started little things like PayPal, Tesla, SpaceX, SolarCity. The guy's worth $15 billion. I'm reading his biography right now. Every one of his companies, he has one policy. Fail faster. Seriously, fail faster. Why does that work? Well, he knows that it's going to take a number of failures to get to success. So he gets in there, he says, let's get started, let's fail, let's learn from it and move to the next failure and keep moving until we get there. And he's been kind of successful, okay? That's why we need to be free to fail. So we need to open ourselves to that love that Jesus has for us, and then we can't be shaken and we're free to fail. Now that's failure. Why do we need to be free to be rejected? Well, spoiler alert, you will be rejected, and you're going to be rejected a lot. And here's the kicker. As you get more successful, you will be rejected more. I figured this up just for this message. Between the companies who don't book me, the offers that we make that are not accepted, and some of the comments that I get on my online presence, I figure that I am rejected between 300 and 1,500 times a year. It happens a lot. In fact, check this out. Okay, I have these YouTube videos, a number of them. And if you add all the views up of all the videos, it's probably in the 7 or 8 million, that's not bad. And I have thousands of comments on them, and 99% of them are really good. But law of numbers says you're going to get some people, those sad little wannabes that say those snippy little things, okay? I save these, and I want to share with you a few of them. Let me read these to you. You ready? Go ahead. Ha, what a cuckoo this guy is. These are all recent, by the way. This gave me a migraine, so yeah, thanks a lot. There must be a reason this guy has been booked to appear before an audience, but so far, I've not seen it. Just the worst. You couldn't pay me to sit through one of his shows so unfunny it hurts to listen to. Funny as a toothache. As funny as a car accident. Wow, so funny I forgot to laugh. As funny as a piece of crap on the sidewalk, you have to go to university to learn to be that crappy. I cleaned that one up. This guy makes horrible sounds that idiots love. Check this out. Not only did he insult me, he insulted everyone who liked any of my videos. Every now and then, though, I'll get someone who'll stick up for me. This guy had a responder. Inversely, you make stupid comments nobody gives a crap about. Go play your xylophone, dork. Now, Tara, my wife, says, why do you save those? You know why? And this is what I want you to know about rejection. That's a badge of honor. That tells me I am in the game, I matter, and I'm a force to be reckoned with, and it means the same for you. When you start getting rejected, it means you're making an impression. And as long as you have that love of God as your base, it doesn't matter. It doesn't shake who you are. This doesn't shake who I am. I laugh at it. I think it's kind of funny. So, that's how we're going to deal with the fear of failure and the fear of rejection. Let's move on to the fear of success. That's counterintuitive. Why in the world, if we want to be successful, would we fear success? Well, it turns out we can get addicted to being a sluggard. We may hate it. We may not like this life. But because success is different and unknown, we associate like pain with that. Like we don't know how to handle it. So we self-sabotage. We keep ourselves in that sluggard state. Sometimes it's subconscious, but it happens anyway. Or we don't know how we would handle it. How would you handle it if you actually got out of debt and you were doing well? What would you do with that? Oh no. What would you do if your relationship was actually good and you liked your marriage and you had no more excuse to be angry in life? How would you handle it? So we self-sabotage. There is a writer and speaker named Marianne Williamson. She has the best solution for the fear of success that I've ever heard in my life, and I'd like to read it to you. Marianne Williamson says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Well, actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people will not feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us. It is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give others permission to do the same. You're depriving the world if you're not living that dream that you have inside for whatever reason. We need what you bring to the table. Now, Marianne said something in there, a phrase that I want to bring up, because it brings up a difficult subject that has caused a lot of heartache. She referred to the phrase, shrinking so that other people will not feel insecure around you. This is what I would call toxic people. Occasionally in our lives, we will have a toxic person. A toxic person is someone who is very close to you, emotionally tied to you, who has become threatened by your success and is now using that emotional tie to hold you down. If you have a toxic person in your life, there are only two ways to deal with that. One is they have to change. Or two, they have to go. And it's up to you to initiate it. They have to change or they have to go. I've been an adult for 35 years. I have had three of them in my life. They weren't romantic relationships. They were friends of mine, very close friends. And there's some common denominators, four of them that I found. One, it always starts great. Two, it's emotionally close for a long time. Three, as you start to change and grow and become more successful, it exposes an unhealthy relationship that was going there and a void in that person, and they can't stand it. And number four, ending it will be difficult and emotional. But you have to. If you have a toxic person, you can talk to them and say, hey, this needs to change. And if it doesn't, they have to go. Enough said. So that's how we're going to deal with fear. The best part of that is to just say yes to the love that God has for us. Now let's move on to laziness. We like being sluggards. We have a tendency to want to be sluggards. I have a three-part solution for laziness. And the first one is this. Get some sleep. Get some sleep. As a country, none of us get enough sleep. I don't get enough sleep. And I teach this, and I'm working on it, but I'm not there yet, okay? When you sleep, your body rejuvenates. Your body recharges itself. It actually heals itself. We get a lot of chronic illnesses because of a lack of sleep. When we sleep, it causes us to wake up energized. We go through the day, and when we come home, we have energy. But I'll bet when you come home right now, it feels like, oh, I got to get on the couch and watch television. I'm just too tired, right? Get enough sleep. That's number one. Number two, Todd Lilly, who's one of the band leaders here, one of the worship leaders, he and I last week were back there talking about, I was telling him what I was going to talk about today, and he said, I'll tell you what helps me get past laziness. I need a good reason to do what I'm doing. He doesn't realize how right he was about that. Reason, purpose, the meaning behind what we do is the most powerful motivational force on the entire planet. You give us a good reason, we'll do anything. So, when you have a goal or something that you really want to do, don't just write down the goal, what you got to do, you write it down. Write down the reason you want it. Who's going to benefit from you being successful? Who's going to benefit from this happening? That's a reason to get out of bed and make it happen. That's number two. And number three, a little tough love here. Grow up. Get some self-discipline. I define self-discipline as doing what you need to do, when you need to do it, regardless of how you feel about it. Enough said. That's it. We got to get out of bed. We got to make ourselves do the things that we need to do. Now, so that's, we're going to get enough sleep, we're going to get a reason why, and we're going to have some self-discipline. That's laziness. Now, let's move on to the third challenge, and that is distractions. This is a difficult one because this can happen even when you've started to move toward your goal, but other things come in. You got to do this, you got to do that. This thing happens. Everything that we do, everything that happens to us in our lives can be divided into two categories, the urgent and the important. Urgent things, text message, phone call, someone walks into your office unexpectedly. It's 7:45 and the new episode of your favorite TV show is on in 15 minutes, okay? Those are urgent things. The email ding, right? Those are urgent things. Important things. Doing your art, working on the thing that you've longed to do, your ministry, learning that new skill that'll cause you to get a promotion, that'll cause you to get out of debt and make all things better, right? Those are important. Here's the challenge. Urgent things are rarely important. Email ding, or you get a text message, it's like, hold on, I got a text. You go look at it, it says, hey, how are you doing? Smiley face emoji. You've interrupted something important just to go look at that thing, right? And the other challenge is important things are not urgent. You don't have to work on you don't have to write. You don't have to create. You don't have to study and learn to get better at what you do. It's just a proactive good thing to do. Now, occasionally there are ones that hit both, that are both urgent and important. Your kid is sick at school. That's urgent and important. You got to do that, okay? And there are some things that are neither, okay? You've TiVo'd your favorite show and you're going to watch it. You can do that when you want to. It's not wrong. It's just, the key here is to focus on important things first. Close off the possibility of the interruptions and give yourself an allotted amount of time to work on that on a regular basis. Now, I shared these with Tara last night and we were talking about this and I changed this program just because of this. She said, you need to talk about mothers. Mothers get distractions, don't you? Yeah. Okay. In a major, especially if you got kids. Oh, well, mothers would have kids, wouldn't they? Nothing gets past me. mothers who have kids, I mean kids at home, kids who have to go to school, have to be fed, have to get their homework. They forgot their homework, you got to take it to school, you got to do things in the afternoon. I have two ideas about this, and the first one is simply to recognize if you're a mom and you're in that treadmill, awesome. You're doing something that is important. God bless you. That is one of the toughest jobs in the world, and I applaud you. I think it's fantastic, okay? Take that to heart, that what you're doing is serving the world. That's one. The other thing is, if you do have that dream back here, here's my suggestion. Choose a time. If you have younger kids that have naps during their nap time, if you have older kids, tell them, look, 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, or whatever time you choose, 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, that's mom's time. Mommy gets this time. Now you can go read, or you can go look at your iPad, or you can go work on your watch your video or whatever, but this is mommy's time, and I don't want you to interrupt, so that you have an hour to work on what it is that you love to do. Two great things will happen from that. Number one, you're gonna feel good because you're actually getting a chance to do something that's for you. And number two, you're gonna teach your kids that the same is true for them, that their goal and working on what they love is important for them to do. More is caught than taught. You're modeling that activity for them. So that's how we're gonna deal with distractions. Focus on the important over the urgent and plan a time. And that brings me to what Stephen Pressfield says is the most important way to beat resistance, and what I kinda just foreshadowed there. Here's how I want you to beat resistance. Book it. Right now, I'm hoping you've been thinking of something that you really want to do, that idea. I want you to take your next free 90 minutes, whether that's when you get home from Verve, that's later tonight, God will forgive you. Working on the Sabbath. It's a good thing. Or if it's tomorrow morning, whenever your next free 90 minutes is, commit to working on your goal and not letting anything stop you. And then book the next one and keep doing it. Here's what you're gonna find. This is the benefit. This is what it all comes down to in taking action. First of all, there's two of the main ones. First of all, you're gonna feel great. This is awesome. When you start taking action, it just feels so good. And number two, your life is going to start to change. And when you commit to simply working on one thing and you stay at it, other things start going in the same time. They start spiraling in the same positive direction. Your relationship gets better. Your finances get better. Your job gets better. Different things start happening to make things better. So book it for 90 minutes at least and make that happen. William Faulkner, the great novelist, was asked, "Do you write when you're inspired? Or do you write at a specific time every day?" And he said, "Oh, I only write when I'm inspired," which luckily happens at 9 o'clock every morning. Book it, he gets it, right? Stephen Pressfield said, "No one says I'm never gonna write my symphony. What they say is, I'll write it tomorrow or next week, and it never happens." He goes on to say, writing, or whatever your dream is, writing isn't hard. Sitting down to write is really hard. Don Shula, who's the Hall of Fame football coach, said it really easily. It's the start that stops most people. You got to sit down, show up, and get it to happen. Now, I don't know what's going to happen exactly if you start taking action. I know it's going to be positive. I don't know exactly how it'll work out. However, I do know exactly what's going to happen if you don't. Nothing. Nothing. Resistance will win. You will be a sluggard. You will have traded results for regrets. So what I'm saying is, going back to Proverbs, free yourself like the gazelle. Take action and make it happen. So let's talk a bit briefly about what that might look like for you. What does taking action look like for you? I'm hoping you've had a goal or a dream in your mind as I've been talking that you want to act on. So maybe it's signing up for my Virtuoso class. That would be awesome if you want to do it. It might mean getting involved here at Verve. It might mean starting to write whatever it is you want to write, starting to practice your instrument. It might mean actually setting in motion the things that it'll take to build that business that'll make you become your own boss, the thing that you love to do. It might mean you got a challenge and it's getting in a 12-step program. That's a great action. That's important. Or maybe You're one of those people like me who in the past has gotten your self-worth from all the things out there. For me, it was guitar playing and relationships and other things. And it's time to say yes to the love that Jesus has for us. If that's you, you can talk to the folks at the Velcro Bar. July 31st, we're doing baptisms. And you might just start checking into that. My father passed away about 3 years ago. And it was sad, but it was not unexpected. And when he did, somebody move these things up here. When he did, we went through, my siblings and I were going through his things. And we found some things that the whole side of my dad we knew nothing about. We found Tony Robbins motivational tapes. We found plans for businesses we knew nothing about. We found, and I'm trying to see, oh, here they are. Boost Your Memory Learning, Memory Power Learning cassettes. They're on VHS and cassette. They're that old, right? Can you see a problem with these? Yeah, they're not opened. We could make the joke that he forgot to open the memory power tapes. But the reality is actually kind of sad. Like every one of us, he had the idea, but he never took action on it. Please don't let that happen to you. Take initiative, take action, and start it right away. Book it and make that happen. I'm going to sing one more song. This is actually, speaking of my father, this is the first song I ever played and sang on stage, and it's because he asked me to, and it gave me a career. And it is also the song that I sang to him on his deathbed. And it's about taking action, taking the right kind of actions, and not letting that time waste. I think you will recognize it. It goes like this. A child arrived just the other day. It came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch, bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for a new. And as he grew, he said, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, the little boy doing the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. We'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I've got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. It said, I'm gonna be like him. Like him. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, the little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, that I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. He came from college just the other day, so much like a man I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you, could you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know I'll have a good time now. Long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me.
and the cradle and the silver spoon, the boy blue and the man on the moon. We're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then.